Just a few decades ago, it seemed the biggest environmental concern you would hear about was the hole in the ozone layer. There was talk of how pollution was making it worse as it grew, what it would mean for you, your skin and skin cancers. But slowly talk of this hole above Antarctica has slowly died away. So has it gone? Was it never as bad as you were initially told? Let's find out this morning with Dr. Robin Schofield from the University of Melbourne. Good morning.
Good morning.
When did we, take us back, when did we first learn about the hole in the ozone layer?
So it was probably measured a little earlier, but really it was a groundbreaking publication that came out in 1986 that over at Halley Station they saw that the ozone, there was an ozone hole happening. Mm. Yeah.
And so then what did we start hearing about the impact of that and why it was happening?
Well, it would have been identified much earlier than that. So Paul Crutzen and colleagues, and they ended up getting a Nobel Prize for it, Sherland and Rowland, they all collectively had said putting chlorine, so CFC, so chlorofluorocarbons, into the atmosphere, they'll make it, they're so stable, we're using them as in foams and in aerosol sprays and air conditioners because they're great fire retardants, and so we were putting them into all these substances, very useful gases, but very long-lived and very stable. And they wouldn't break down until they got to the stratosphere. And so the UV, so the high UV in the stratosphere, would break them down. And that chlorine being introduced to the stratosphere would destroy ozone. Mm. And so they had predicted much earlier than that, than the ozone hole being discovered, that it would have an effect in the stratosphere. But what was surprising about the Antarctic ozone hole was that that happened at the peak of the ozone layer. So the ozone layer peaks around between 10 and 15 kilometres. And the prediction was the chlorine in the stratosphere would have the biggest impact at around 40 kilometres. And it does have an impact up there, but over the cold poles, you get polar stratospheric clouds, and so you get surface reactions. Mm. And that was a surprising thing, causing the ozone hole and depleting the ozone.
And there's only ever been that one hole, right, over Antarctica?
There has been one hole in the Arctic. And the hole does mix out over the whole southern hemisphere every year, so we're still living under depleted relative to 1980 levels, and we will continue to do so for about 50 years.
So did we start seeing huge changes that lessened the impact on the ozone layer?
Well, that led to the most successful environmental treaty of our time, the Montreal Protocol, and the banning of CFCs and other ozone-depleting substances, including methyl bromide, which is here in Victoria, where I'm speaking from, is used for strawberry and so pre-quarantine and shipment treatments. Mm-hmm. But the bans of those substances, which because very few industries were involved, and those industries that were involved were very engaged in the process. They didn't want to be causing environmental damage. They wanted to be part of the solution, and they certainly have been in finding replacement substances and gases.
Yeah, is that something that we've seen widespread as well? We did see changes to how CFCs were used on a global level as well.
Oh, absolutely, yes, a global ban. Yes, global ban of these substances and with trade implications. So certainly couldn't trade them and so sanctions even. So that came in quickly and so the Montreal Protocol was signed in 1987. So, you know, how fast that process was. It had started before the ozone hole had been discovered, the banning of those substances, the recognition that they were going to be damaging to to the environment.
Yeah.
So very positive story. And something I like to tell my students is that the banning of CFCs and their and other ozone depleting substances is still the strongest climate mitigation action that we have taken globally. That's frightening.
Yeah, did it see the hole reduce in size? Like, where is that ozone hole now?
So the ozone hole year on year does form, and so many things have to come together. You have to have so the amount of chlorine is decreasing, so we're seeing that in the stratosphere. We're seeing that decreasing, so that's something that we can predict very clearly year on year. But what we can't predict sometimes, and we have a bit of a handle on it, is how dynamically active, so how much movement we're getting in the stratosphere. This year has been a very dynamically active and very warm stratosphere. And so that's resulted in it being a lot more movement, and the stability that's required to form the ozone hole hasn't been there this year. So we're going to have a much smaller ozone hole this year than in previous years. But last year was quite a big year. And so next year, again, could be up there. But we are on a trajectory to heal. And as I said, that healing date is somewhere around 50 years away.
Given it is seen as a bit of a success story, given we're talking a lot more about different sort of climate challenges at the moment, how do you think we can look at the action that was taken in the 80s, the work that's been done to heal the ozone layer and apply it to other environmental concerns that we have today?
Yeah, so good learnings from the ozone community, engagement with the industry. So industry not being seen as the problem, but rather really part of the solution. And we're seeing that today, you know, like where the engagement of renewables and non-renewables, and the recognition that it's our energy sector that's largely going to have to reform, and we're seeing that now and transition. And so we're really seeing that now. But politics and international coming together was immensely important, and there was a little bit of denialism involved in the process, but there wasn't the I guess the disdain for science that we're seeing and that we're seeing in the climate debate, and then certainly we're seeing you know, there are analogies with smoking as well. So it's challenging. It's one of those problems.
Robin, really interesting to chat with you about this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Dr. Robin Schofield there from the University of Melbourne. She's the Director of the Environmental Science Hub at the University of Melbourne.